we left off, page 374. And I'll just do a quick review. Remember, we're doing, first we had the onslaught, then we had the attempt to establish order, and now we're having imagery dealing with the bringing of the two together again. And the textual parallel this is based on is the Song of Songs, excuse me, which is a dialogue between two lovers where they come together and they fly apart, they come together and they fly apart. And that is relevant because that's often the way these highly emotionally charged situations go, in which there are opposites activated. It's not just hello, Vinny. It's hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye. And the theme we've been working with is that the male represents the body, and the female figure represents Sophia, or wisdom. And this is all going on in the unconscious. This is not being integrated. So we're seeing, that might be
Tom,
he said he could come in. Mm-hmm. This is not actually being integrated. So what we're seeing is just this process being run out in the unconscious, or, oh, I'll wait till you get back if you want to.
That was supposed to be the male.
Oh, it sounded more like the male than Tom. Tom, sir.
It was male. Never male.
Aha. I get it. So the first male is the body. And the female is the spirit, which is weird. We've talked all about that. And the difficulty of understanding this is to recognize how this word body is being used. You could say the first meaning of the body is the unconscious. So that in the initial condition, the unconscious assaults, you get clarity, but then you lose relationship with the unconscious, and then you try to bring the two together again. Well, that's kind of abstract. Another way to think of the body is that it really is the physical body. That when you are trying to get a grasp on your psyche, because what is attacking you often has physiological roots, as you try to get a grasp on yourself, your body begins to take second place. The desires of the body get controlled, and the body becomes a little stiff even. Just think of stopping drinking alcohol. You physically don't go near alcohol. You physically don't go near bars. You physically don't go back to your old haunts. You may even change your whole physical world of friends to get away from that desire. So the unconscious and the physical body are not as different as it may sound when you first think, no, does she mean the unconscious or does she mean my body? Well, she means both. Another meaning of the body is physical reality, because the emotions, the unconscious, the physiological part of ourselves is what meets time and space. So, again, thinking of the alcoholic will control their bodily desires, will watch what situations trigger their emotions. So they're not only separating from their body's impulses, they're not only separating from their emotions, they're also separating from the physical places that trigger that. So you can think of this as really the body as a symbol with many different meanings, but not necessarily separate. In any case, on whatever dimension you're working with it, there is a separation when understanding is generated, and then there's a return to life. and the understanding that was achieved in abstraction is then confronted with the situations that used to trigger it. But now, rather than those emotions overrunning the understanding begins to, as it were, penetrate into those old disturbing situations, and there's a change in both. That also bears on synchronicity, because it, although I'm taking the argument a little bit further than the book does, because this is where synchronicity comes in. Reality actually starts acting differently. That's really the unus mundus, and I don't want to get us off onto that prematurely. This kind of thing will be taken up in the Pali material quite a bit. But just so you know, when we say body, we mean a whole pile of different things. So, 365, we have the image of the man gets the wings of the dove. That's the spiritualization of matter, or that is the understanding returning to matter, and it has it receives the effect of what that understanding can give it. Another word for this is the unio corporalis. Well, should sound familiar, I hope. Another way to say this, and it's where the text also became a little confusing, is that at this point you could say God becomes matter if you're using a theological language. Because the understanding, which would be when you hold in your mind who you are, which has come to you through the Sophia distillation, and you begin to affect the way you live and affect the way your body acts, affect the way your desires work, affect the way reality operates, that body in all its different interpretations actually starts to have the stamp of your understanding. So in that sense, the matter becomes like the spirit. So, at that point, there really isn't a difference between matter and spirit, which is what the whole point of this business is. So that's how she can say that the matter is spirit and the spirit is matter, everything is everything, because in the fusion, the two begin to share each other's worlds. And, you know, the most obvious example of that would be in a synchronicity, that the physical world acts like a symbol. So at that point, matter and symbol, if we take symbol as coming from the unconscious or the self, matter and the self are the same thing. I think if you keep that in mind, it helps some of these phrases where she says, well, matter is spirit, spirit is matter, and everything is everything. But the phrase is that God becomes physical. That was on 367, and I thought it did a nice summing up. That's what we're trying to do. Realize that there really, it doesn't have to be a separation between the physical world and the spiritual world. Another image was on page 370 of the ear. Remember, we talked about the annunciation. Mm-hmm. The spirit comes in through the ear in the, I don't think it's biblical. I don't know if we ever ascertained, but that is actually biblical. I don't think it is. But it's certainly legendary. I showed you this couple of pictures where the dove was flying toward Mary, and if you followed the trajectory of the lines of the dove, it went right into her ear. And that's the image the text uses for the man's receiving Sophia. So the body's receiving Sophia is a type of second coming. The spirit becomes flesh, or the self becomes matter. That makes sense. Again, it's also very much what she was, Von Faust was working on, all the ramifications of that.
So they're comparing the self, capital S, with Christ.
Right. There's a parallelism. We're working in different languages, mm-hmm. but in one language system, it would be Christ. It would be God, Holy Spirit, impregnating Mary. And what they're saying is our contemporary version of that is when the self makes an impact on you in the way you live in the physical world, even to the point where the self may impact the physical world on the way the physical world acts in a synchronicity. That is a second coming. Each of those moments is, if you use Christian language, a second coming. Remember, we don't work in a religious framework. We don't work in a, we don't use the language of a creed. We try to use the language of experience. But since these images appear in the text so clearly, she is saying, if you are looking at this thing from a Christian standpoint, here's what it would mean. That actually you can see that the Christian story in his unconscious is trying to evolve. And I think if you read the most, a couple of theologians I like. One is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Mm-hmm. He has the phrase, a religionless Christianity. I think you hear this thing in other places, meaning that what defined the Christian was the way they live. Mm-hmm. And that if you live that life, your understanding of your relationship to Christianity will change. Jung talks about serving the will of the self as the religious task. It's different languages, but very, very similar, I think, in meaning. Teilhard de Chardin and Dietrich Bonhoeffer are the two who, in the church, quite apart from what Jung was doing, we're trying to express this point of view in Teilhard de Chardin in his book *The Phenomenon of Man*. He was a medic at the Battle of Verdun. Teilhard, he was French, and in the heat of the battle, he saw Christ descend, and the universe became divine. Somebody drops something.
Oh, my lap.
Okay. Teilhard, Teilhard. Dechardin. So he developed this whole theology out of that experience, that God wants to become the earth. And in its darkest hour. Of course, you won't be surprised, his works were silenced by the church. Yeah, he could not publish any of his works.
Oh, yeah.
Was he a priest?
Yeah, he was a priest. He was a Jesuit. Mm-hmm.
And he has some quote about it, and then when that happens, man will have discovered fire
for the second time.
Mm. Mm. And there's something,
it is. Oh, he's beautiful.
Yeah, he is.
I find his work difficult to read, but there's a wonderful biography. I think her name is King, Magda King, and I forget the exact title of it, but it's a warmly written biography, and he must have been an amazing man. I wish he would, he was tortured. Talk about tortured. I mean, he really did try to be true to the church, but he had these ideas which were so far in advance. He was a paleontologist in China. That's how that's where he worked. And then he wrote.
Did you say her name was Magna King?
I think it's K-I-N-G. M-A-G-D-N-A.
G-N-A.
I forget the exact title of the book. It's got... to Chardin and so on.
It has the word fire in it, doesn't it?
That holy fire, maybe, or something like that. It's got fire in it, yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, once you hear this idea, then I try to look around, are these guys the only one talking about this? Mm-hmm. And you see, no, some very progressive theologians, I mean, Bonhoeffer was executed by Hitler, and Teilhard was silenced, were also articulating a very analogous point of view.
Jean Houston in her book, A Mythic Life.
Well, she took off Teilhard.
Yes. As a young girl, she just started meeting this man in the park and didn't know who he was. And then had his whole education unbeknownst to her by this man until he died.
Mm-hmm.
And she became aware of who he was.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful story. Mm-hmm.
It was Chardin?
Yeah.
What's
he
in
was
her
alone.
Book?
He was living in New York in Manhattan. And I think it was another priest. And he would come down and she would see him as she was... She just took up with him one day, and then they began meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And her book is called A Mythic Life.
Thank you.
And she talks about their conversations, and they're just beautiful.
Yeah. Now, Jung didn't give people a lot of compliments about the quality of their work, but I did read one guy who went to visit Jung, and the phenomenon of man was sitting on Jung's table, and Jung said, that's a fantastic book. So I think he thought very highly of that work as well. Okay, just to let you know, we get so specific, but I also like you to appreciate, I think we're dealing with a movement that other people have sensed and have tried to express. The other theme that was discussed on 370 is this garment the guy gets, which is the same as the dove, which is the same as the bird coming into the ear. And that led her to talk about colors. That what we're doing now is we're recoloring life. Yeah, and literally, people who have gone through the separation process, which is don't want to over-dramatize it. It's not necessarily always depressing, but it's bland. Because you're separating from all your old past behavior, and you don't have anything to put in its place. So you walk around feeling bleh. And what they will dream of is color pictures, black and white pictures becoming colorized. So these grand archetypal themes appear sometimes in very banal ways. But once you know the pattern, you can locate where the person is, even in these sort of obscure images. That's basically what we did. 374. Actually, I said something last time, which I thought was pretty good. I listened to the tape. Now, look, this is a very good summary of Aurora. And I will repeat. Knowledge of the self comes through physiologically and morally complicated situations.
Say it again.
Knowledge, thank you. Knowledge of the self comes through physiologically and morally complicated situations. This is really nothing different than Jungian psychology, except it's looking at that case when you have to get this contact with the self in a messy way. It doesn't always have to come this way, but it can. And that's when this material is relevant.
Are you finished with your review? Because
yes.
There was one part.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Something about something about a new, when you are newly immersed in illumination or something like that. It's so powerful.
And here, do you want to look at it?
I don't know what changes.
Oh.
I was looking.
Was it something we've already done or something we already did?
Yeah.
Well, the idea is that the body is illuminated, which means that understanding makes a difference in the emotions, in your physical self, and in outer reality.
What were the three?
Emotions, physical self, and outer reality.
What was that thing?
I'm taking that picture is way out there.
We're going to be popping the wine here and there.
We can say going down the
sentence.
I don't know what I just said.
Emotions, physical self, and outer reality?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Effective price of rice in China.
Oh, that's wonderful.
All the
emotions, physical self.
A barrel of oil today.
Outer reality.
Outer reality, yeah. She was asking about the idea that the body, the man, gets illuminated. And I was saying that's when the body or the emotions or the our outer reality. Remember, we're using the word body to mean several different things at the same time. Receives the effect of the understanding. And I'm not sure how I can get this across, but if I'm saying this right, but you see, what's so interesting about this text is this guy's not understanding what's going on. But the unconscious is showing this is a natural process, that if you get your understanding, naturally the thing moves into a shift to the cell phone. This is why we should date at St. Paul.
No, what was it? Well, I'm afraid of saying yes. That must happen.
Let's see, what was it saying?
If you're understanding, the body shifts into...
Well, the process naturally will...
That's me.
Sure, that if you can understand...
I think the devil...
You get your shit together, we will have a time.
Hello?
Stop on everybody.
Hello. Goodbye.
Okay.
I think I took it verbatim. Unconscious is showing... that you get understanding.
Well, this process happens naturally. There's a dynamism that will take your understanding and move it into your emotions. Is that... It's a little different than, oh, now what do I do? It's a series of events that will intrinsically happen as an archetypal process. That once there is an understanding on one level, then the psychological task shifts and it moves it into... actually begins penetrating the way you're feeling and the way the physical world is felt by you and how it responds to you. And you just have to cooperate with it. And that takes us to 374. Okay, but basically that.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to be doing now is just hearing this again and again and again and again. Sometimes talking about the nature of the body that has been illuminated. Sometimes talking about the nature of Sophia, who is the illuminator. And sometimes talking about the relationship. Because again, based on the Song of Songs, that's what we get there, this back and forth connection and so on. So, you've got the basic idea. All we're going to do now is elaborate and embellish. And we pick up with an image that we've already had, bottom 374. And, to be wisdom shall clothe me with the robe of righteousness, and shall betroth me to thee with thy ring, and clothe my feet in sandals of gold. All this shall my perfect beloved do, exceedingly beautiful and comely. I think that's enough for there. So, see, it's just more of the robing and the adornment. One interesting commentary from the theological implication is starting about the middle of the page, 375. The author is describing a unio mystica. See the SE that italicized word at the middle of the page, 375,
mm-hmm.
with God. The figure he variously calls wisdom, the woman, the water, and the bride, now this is the important part, is nothing less than God himself, or at any rate some aspect of him. All that saying is what we're seeing is that Sophia is a dimension of the divine image which has been excluded and is now returning. And when it returns, it changes the apple cart.
Question.
Yeah.
I had a reaction to that in terms of nothing less than God himself.
Mm-hmm.
But that speaks of God as a masculine entity.
Yeah, I think she's being a little ironic there. It's because it's really God herself.
Uh-huh.
But God himself is, in fact, female.
God herself.
It's
both.
It's, you know, God himself is, again, I think, her being a bit ironic. She doesn't mean that factually. She means that, what we're calling God himself is actually a God himself and herself. And here's the herself part of God.
Okay.
The ring indicates the eternity of the lover's union in the self. Not much more there. This is a complicated sentence. After the ring bit, the bridegroom speaks throughout with such humility that one is inclined to see in him an ordinary mortal, indeed the author himself. But later it becomes increasingly clear that he is a personification of the self with whom the author has become emotionally identified. So we said that wisdom is God herself. And now we're saying that the bridegroom, who is the body, is also God.
So that's a capital S.
Yes. It might be more accurate to say, I'm actually using sort of incorrect Jungian language. I should be saying the God image. Mm-hmm. That the that Sophia is a dimension of the God image, which has not registered into Western consciousness. And the bridegroom is a dimension of the God image that has not registered into Western consciousness. But what does that mean? I think the implications are pretty startling. Remember, the bridegroom is the body, is matter, is emotions, is desire, is reality. What is so important there? And what are the implications of that statement?
I don't know whether this is it, but it's sort of like what in the Christian point of view has always been considered sin is now become.
Yeah. The physical world is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
The divine, the error of our Western grasp of God is that the God image is seen as something apart from the world, or that the world is not a dimension of the God image. But the implication here, in other words, that the psyche of Thomas is bringing back to him the dimensions of experience that his Christendom has excluded, is that the world and desire is as much a part of God as our old understanding of God.
I have something that illustrates that kind of sickness a little bit. The National Council of Churches tried to establish a global climate change discussion group for various congregations, and they tried to get one started here in Indianapolis, and they just didn't fly. So I talked to a guy in New York about it, and said, what's the deal? Why can't you get acceptance? He says, well, within the Christian tradition, there are people who have a real problem with this because they feel like you're worshiping the creator, the creation, instead of the creator.
Mm-hmm.
So right there's that split. They can't see that by using stewardship to take care of the earth, whether it's pollution or that sort of thing. Anyway, I just thought that kind of illustrates.
That's exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. The creator defines creation.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and that there really isn't a distinction between creator and creation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Again, that little sentence was a sleeper, and it held a implication I thought was not immediately obvious. And she says, as we will see later, so we'll be following up on this idea of the divinity of the bridegroom, as well as the divinity of the bride.
Is emotionally identified, are those the powerful words?
No, is a personification of the self.
Okay. So that is his self is his appreciation of Sophia?
No, that the implication of his of this image is that the psyche is introducing and will later pick up on again, the idea that the bridegroom is as much an image of God as wisdom is an image of God. And both of those have been excluded from the traditional representation of the image of God.
Okay. I thought the emotion identified might have indicated Sophia there.
Well, it does in the sense that this is how he got to this place, because he's been cast into an emotional experience, which is the quality of a Sophia experience. Yeah.
Is this connection between the creator and the creation being identical, what's going on with this whole intelligent design argument about teaching, you know, in the schools about intelligent design or the Bible?
I can't think of the word. Evolution, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's against evolution.
Well, you've got the two factors.
Yeah, two, yeah.
You know, that are so
positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's come back to visit us again, mm-hmm. You know.
And if you really, I'm not up on this very well, but from what I'm aware of, if you look at the current contemporary research in evolution, and this is something Pauli was very much interested in, the Darwinian notion does not adequately explain some jumps in evolution, putting it very simply. And some of Pauli's friends were biologists who were working on this and suggested statistically the evolution of certain subfunctions of organs, I guess, or certain functions of organs, statistically breaks the bell curve. So that chance cannot be used to totally explain evolution.
Does this come up in our next text if you're going
to? Indirectly, not too directly.
Who writes about that?
Well, what's the guy's name? I have to check, Carol. It was Delbrook, Max Delbrook.
Actually, that's been in the news lately.
It's not a new idea.
Yeah, that's been in some of the national media talking about that.
This was very much Teilhard's idea as well. Anyway, the bottom line is you can statistically show that what's Darwin's term? Natural selection isn't sufficient for explaining some mutations, which suggests that there is a spirit in nature moving evolution forward. It's not being pushed by events, but there's a goal that it's moving towards. So that really evolution is an example, as these people are working with it, of the spirit in matter.
Mm-hmm. It's coming to meet us.
It's nice. Yeah.
You know, the problem is there science in its efforts to discuss these theories and ideas is open to lowercase t truth, whereas the particular proponents of intelligent design have a particular religious mm-hmm. worldview that they're trying to interject, using the postmodern argument that truth is lowercase t because we can't have a capital letter T truth, because everything's just a story, and depending on how you put together the narrative of your story, you come up with one truth. But if you put together the narrative in a different way, you come up with a different truth. It's all, you know,
now, I don't understand the, what's the term you use? The
postmodern?
No. But before that, the intelligent design.
Yeah.
What's their position?
Their position is they're trying to sneak in the capital G God through the back door, as it were. And by saying that, well, this couldn't just have happened randomly. There has to be a creator. Now, they're not using a scientific language to do that. They're using a religious language to do this, to put forth their theory, which is not really a theory so much as it is a religious.
It's not that far from what I'm saying.
Except it's bad by the Bush administration.
They're trying to take over the creation story in Genesis.
It's Genesis.
That's what they're trying to do.
They're calling it different words.
It's very similar. They might be drawing different conclusions from it.
Well, at the same time, they're saying that science is invalid in a certain way.
Yeah.
They're not unifying. They're separating by saying that science is invalid in a certain respect.
Well, let me just go with where these people are, like, say, what Pauli and his Dublup were going, is that, and Teilhard, I think, too, it's very similar, that this is God. There is an end point that we are moving towards.
That's sort of the Aristotelian intellect.
It's very close. It's very close. How else do you explain it? How else do you explain a meaningful development that you can statistically show violates chance? That's what they can prove. I mean, that's what they feel they can prove.
Definition of God as energy?
Well, Teilhard calls it the omega point. Mm-hmm. That there's a place we're going, and that place we're going is God, and that's the same place that we started.
You're talking about the singularity now and things like that, too. And chaos theory.
You're beyond me here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm beyond myself, too, but these are the terms that are being used.
Yeah. Well, it's... I don't... I imagine what I've just said could be taken and twisted, you know. But
yes, we have it on tape.
But the idea is that there's a purpose in nature. That's behind all of this stuff. That's behind all of this.
Is that behind scientific inquiry, too?
Strict science would negate the hypothesis of purpose.
Oh.
And I think, I mean, you know, how should I put it? I'm not even sure how to put it. I would say contemporary science. I mean, that's a difficult word to define. But if you look at the implications of quantum physics, if you look at the implications of what these people were doing with evolution, statistically, it violates the hypothesis of purposelessness. Try to say that fast. And that science and purpose do not have to be antithetical positions at all. Now, if you talk to most scientists, they'll say, that's crazy. But if you read what I would call the creative scientists, and not, you know, just flaky, but people are doing hard research, they can show, no, this is not in conflict.
There's a wonderful book called The Theology of Becoming. I mentioned that before, that takes it from a construction theologian point of view. It's the same thing, but it's the theologian coming into matter versus the matter coming into spirit. Catherine, who wrote From the Broken Web? Catherine.
Who wrote what?
I forget her last name. Anyway, Theology of Becoming is excellent. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I think, to be fair to these guys, and then we'll get off of it, but they're not trying to establish, oh, therefore there's a God. They're just saying, my gosh, what is operative in the universe if there is something other than causality?
Other than what?
Other than causality.
Okay.
What other principle is operational? And how do we conceive of it? And that's where they stop. They don't go off into any big, you know, therefores.
What do they call them?
Yeah, they're just saying, here's a principle we don't understand, and it exists. And it sounds a bit like God, but we don't know. But it sure as heck shows there's more to events than cause. And why that is applicable here? Because that's Sophia. Sophia is the spirit in matter, and one of the ways to talk about the spirit of matter would be the causal, the principle of motivation in the physical and natural world that is purposive. We see that in our lives, and Jung, of course, could establish that pretty clearly. Then when he met Pauli, Pauli said, holy smokes, that's the same for matter. We don't know where to go from here, but I'm scientist enough to see the contradictions. That's what I love that guy. I mean, he could at least see that the facts contradicted the theories. We don't have a new theory yet.
So is he causal and purposive?
Apparently purposive. Mm. Apparently purposive, yeah.
He says acausal?
Acausal.
Okay.
Well, isn't that sort of what Jung was talking about with the self?
Yeah, but they're applying it to the physical world as well. Physical and natural world. So you can see how they must have got excited when they met each other's work.
Mm-hmm.
Each saw it in a different frame. They realized that their models of conceptualization were miles apart, but by God, they were looking at very similar phenomena, which everyone else was saying, no, it doesn't exist. Why? Oh, because the theory says it doesn't exist. And they were scientists who say, well, but the facts happen to say it too. And the pseudoscientists would say, well, it doesn't matter. So then what is science? I think it's very interesting. Anyway. Okay. Another thing that referred to, that just touched on the question that Carol mentioned, that he refers to the bottom of 375 over to 376, was that all this is going on in the guy's unconscious. So he's not actually integrating this material. He is not personally changing. It's like a movie has gotten started in his unconscious, and it's just playing itself out. If consciousness can hook up with it, then there's change. And just because consciousness doesn't hook up with it doesn't mean we can't study it and learn from it. In fact, we might even be able to learn more from it because it's so pure, because there's no ego involved. That we've said in different ways. Okay, you're still with me? 376? Hear ye all nations. I love this part. Hear ye all nations, give ear all ye inhabitants of the world. My beloved, who is ruddy, has spoken to me. He has sought and besought. And this is the quote I put at the beginning of your study guide. I am the flower of the field and the lily of the valley. I am the mother of fair hope and of knowledge and of holy hope. Sort of a poetic description of wisdom. I felt it was so important because, you know, we've been talking about a structural process, really. And it can sound pretty cold. But this shows what happens to somebody who tries to live this way. This process is the source of fairness in love and of real knowing and of hope. In the video, von Franz mentioned that she felt people who became more themselves became less criminal and I forget whether less and more humane. For us, this is the way to those values. It is a fundamental reorientation of the personality. We've talked about all this stuff about how it violates this theory, how it violates that theory, what this image means, what that image means. What it comes down to is you become more humane. And I felt that was very important to mention because of the emotional result of this process and what we're trying to help people to do is become more fair. Become more interested in knowledge instead of power. And more interested in hope than in despair. And the opposite of all those things, define the current lifestyle. Go to a bar, plunk down, start talking to the person next to you, and you will hear how one person is trying to get a leg up on the other. You will hear knowledge belittled, and you will hear cynicism. This is the way to its opposite. Over to 377. Now nothing particularly earth-shaking. As the fruitful vine. All that's saying is that Sophia bestows generosity.
Well, I thought she smelled good.
They are not necessarily mutually exclusive. As she says, bottom of 377, the ecclesiastical symbolism can mean Christ or Mary. That's not so much our main point. I just wanted you to hear the different images of the largesse, the images of largesse that appear in this guy's unconscious in the context of Sophia. Another point she makes is that there's a conjunction or a hermaphroditic implication here, because earlier we referred to her as a lily. Here we refer to her as a grape, and the white and the red are the classic two opposites in alchemy which unite. But, you know, that's kind of pretty pretty fine-tuning the symbolism. I just like you to see how the text represents her, and it represents her as a vineyard. I am the bed of my beloved, 378, which threescore of the most valiant ones surrounded, all holding swords upon their thigh because of fears in the night. The first point she makes is the sword image still shows that she's still a threatening aspect. Remember, she appeared in his dreams, in his visions originally as a storm. And we've made a lot of progress, but she still can raise her head if she wants to. But the really puzzling sentence, I thought, on 379, top, remember she says she's a bed. In this sense, the bride serves as a vessel of union for man with God. Now, that is not so obvious. How is Sophia to be described as a bed, and how is she to be described as, or how is that bed to be described as a vessel of union for man with God? Now, again, we're looking at the theological language and the theological implications of this.
Foundation.
Yeah. How is Sophia a foundation for a union between the human being and the divine? She says man and God.
She's talking about the womb. I mean, that's where they come together.
Right. What's that mean in terms of practical experience?
Could we say the experience of her as a matrix whereby the unseen and the seen work together to form a path?
Yeah, as soon as you get in touch with Sophia, a process starts which tries to bring her into matter and tries to therefore bridge for you the self and you're living the self in time and space. And that's what she's about. She's about the making of the divine plan of the self, if you are comfortable with that language. Or she's comfortable, she's about helping you recognize who you are, and at the same time pushing you or moving you into making that thing real.
So I'm sort of seeing it as a metaphor, the womb and the spirit, mind, place, where it's all happening.
Well, yeah, you could say that if you look at the Mary image, that it comes in through the mind, but then it comes out through the womb. That would be the two the two poles that she is, namely spirit and matter. Again, this is nothing new, but we're giving different, the visions use different images and ask us to conceive of it in different metaphors, but it's the same process. Does that make sense? I have it's 2:30. We got as far as 379. I'm not exactly speeding along.
Yeah, but I think we're just trying to swallow.
Okay. You start throwing frying pans at me, I'll take the hint. Otherwise, I will go slow.
Pardon?
If you start throwing frying pans at me, I will take the hint. Otherwise, I will not attempt to skip over things in the, for the sake of speed. But, yeah, we'll just see how it goes. That takes us to 379. And you probably, if you haven't, you know, try to finish it. We may hit a spot and it goes quick. We may hit a spot and we slow down.